Hi everyone, welcome to Chaos West at RC3. We've got our next talk now. It's going to be about Alexa, the home assistant, and how Alexa is watching us, what Alexa knows about us, and also about the accidental things that Alexa doesn't actually or shouldn't hear about you, but does still record due to accidents. So we've got Svea here. She's a recurring speaker at C3. She's got given around 3-4 talks so far, so we're looking forward to another one. That's always a good sign when people have been here before. And we've also got Maximilian Goller. He's at the Max Planck Institute for Security and Privacy in Bochum. And Lea, she's from Ruhr-Uni Bochum, working on IT security. They are, so the talk is going to be pre-recorded. It's going to last around 40 minutes by Svea. And then afterwards, we've got an extended Q&A session with all three of them. So as usual, we're very happy for you to ask questions on IRC in our standard RC3-CWTV channel and on Twitter or Mastodon under the hashtag RC3CWTV. Let's start the talk.
Hi, so nice to be here at RC3, the remote experience of my talk. And I'm glad that you tuned in and that you decided to listen to my experience and to my research. My name is Svea Eckert. I'm an investigative journalist with ARD NDR, which is Germany's biggest public broadcaster. And I'm basically into tech. I do everything which has to do with privacy and security and also with data protection. And last year, I did a research and I definitely want to share my experience and all my data and stuff I did there. And I did this research for around 6 months, decided in 2019 to collect Alexa data. So I had an Alexa in the living room for 6 months and wanted to know who is listening, how much is Echo or Alexa collecting, and what is happening with the data, or what can you do with it? And this research, it was published at Steuerung F, which is a pretty young format with the NDR, and you can also watch it there, but stay here because this is the background talk to the research, so you will definitely gain a lot of more insights here. Okay, yeah, then let's dive in. So first of all, I think it's pretty important to know why you definitely should look at smart speakers and at smart assistants, because they are on a rise. If this would be an actual stage, I would now ask you, I would now ask everybody who has an Alexa at home, who is using Siri. But okay, this is not a real stage and I cannot see you. And probably with this audience, everybody would say, no, I don't use Alexa. But if you look at the numbers, then it's definitely on the rise. And in Germany, it's 1 out of 4. And in the US, it's 3 out of 4 people. And in China, it's even more. So smart speakers, smart assistants are here to stay and they are growing. And that's even more reason to look at them. Because when you look, where are they? Then you would see that Alexa is everywhere. It is in the car. It is in TV. Maybe you know Amazon Fire TV. And it is in your shower. Or it can be in your shower. So smart assistants are implemented in many, many more things in our common life. And we get in touch with them. And so I think this is definitely the reason to understand, first of all, how they work and then what they do. So let's get to the first part. How does Alexa work? Alexa listens all the time. I think this is very important to know and to understand that Alexa is always turned on and it is listening always with an internal chip. And It also is constantly sharing some metadata with Amazon. It's not voice data, but as researchers found out, Alexa shares information in regular intervals. And of course, Alexa is always looking for updates. But back to the voice data. As I said before, Alexa is always listening, but of course, it's not always uploading voice data. It is the internal chip. And when the internal chip understands the word Alexa, which you can submit as a wake word, then voice data is recorded and transmitted to Amazon servers only when the internal chip has identified the correct wake word. Then the connection with Amazon is established. Now you would think, sounds great, huh? But as anybody knows who is using a smart assistant like Alexa or also like Siri or Hey Google, everybody knows that who is using that actively, that this is not always the case because Alexa or Siri, they turn on off more often in your daily life than you would like it. And they turn on when you, when you actually don't want them to turn on, or if they understand Alexa, but it was not Alexa. And I definitely want to come back to this issue because then it, of course, gets interesting because probably this is the data you don't want to share. And I will go back to this when we look at my own data. To investigate this matter, I conducted an experiment. I installed an Alexa in my family's living room, as I said in the very beginning, and collected my own and my family's voice data for 6 months. I started in November 2019 and then ended in April 2020. And I want to start and share with you some missed recordings. And to do so, I think it's pretty good for you to get first some small understanding. Because of the GDPR, there is a function installed in your Amazon customer account where you can look up all your voice data, all your recorded data. So this is pretty easy. I think it is in the sub menu. But anybody of you who has an Alexa at home can do this and look, okay, which voice recordings does Amazon have from me? So I went on and looked into it, and then you find a lot of audios, and there are also audios, and they have a small label on it, and in the label there is written, this audio was not meant for Alexa. So of course these were the audios I looked at them at first, and I heard some creepy things. So let's tune in to one of them. Let's play that, check it out.
Alexa hat Fieber, liegt die Erde belagert. Und der Tod, früher nur langsam, Schärfe zu beschleichen, beflügelte seine Schritte.
Okay, you hear this now for the first time. I hear this like for the hundreds of times because this is how often I started to record this talk. But I don't know what it is until now. I think it's maybe television. And there was some word in this television series or in this movie who has triggered Alexa, and then she's recording it for a couple of seconds. But let's tune in into the next sound and see what she recorded. Let's see here. Is family chatter and blah blah of kids in the background, and I think Alexa always trying to understand something because you hear this signal like did it in the background. I don't know if you got that. So I think Alexa is trying to hear the wake word and is not identifying it, and then it's recording and recording and recording. So there are no big secrets told here. It's only chit chat and blabber, but anyway, it was kind of creepy for me sitting there looking at all this data from 6 months ago and hearing some chit chat or some strange voices from a movie. I might have seen in this time. So let's turn to the last one. Yeah, cooking sound. What has a cooking sound to do with the wake word? Why did she record that? I will get back to that and explain it in a couple of minutes. But first of all, let's go and dive deeper into my Alexa recordings. Yeah, I mentioned already that I have a family and I have a little daughter. Kids love Alexa, so this is what they do when you are not present.
Alexa, erzähl mir einen Witz.
Alexa, tell me a joke.
Alexa, öffne Bringflügel, Gummibärchen und Schokolade.
Alexa, buy this, buy that. Pretty common. If you can use Alexa as a shopping list and you can add things on it. So this is what kids do when you're not in the room. They are ordering stuff like chocolate and gummy bears. And the last one also, very typically.
Alexa, putz mal.
Okay, so if you're not present, kids are doing stuff with Alexa. Alexa records it and sends everything to Amazon. This were some of the probably more unusual things I saw in the data. These are the very, very common things. I sat there for hours. I listened to every recording I had in the last 6 months, and this was what I heard nearly all the time.
Alexa, stell den Timer auf 8 Minuten.
Alexa, Wohnzimmerlicht an.
You can also turn the light on and off with Alexa. I connected Alexa with the living room lamps. So you can say, turn the light on, turn the light off. Yeah, do you know where I'm going? Okay, I play the last one, then I'm getting to this.
Alexa, spiel mal kurz mein
Piano. You can of course play some music with Alexa. Okay, so at the first glimpse, these functions, they may sound boring in this all context because we were talking about when is Alexa kind of spying at me when I'm doing like super private things or creepy things and Alexa is recording it. But this normal boring audios, they are also pretty interesting because everything comes with a timestamp. And now let's think of metadata. What you can do when you have the voice command, and you also have the metadata, the date and the time, and what you might can do with it, like reconstruct, deconstruct a day or deconstruct a life. I was very curious about this. This was the reason why I gave all the data to my lovely colleague, Marvin. Marvin also works for NDR, and he's there with the data team at NDR. He's pretty good with data. And I brought him a stick and said, okay, Marvin, I trust you. I give you all my Alexa. My family's life is now in your hands. Please do your magic. I didn't do it by myself because I had this idea. When I give this to Marvin, then a stranger is looking at my data. And I found this pretty interesting thought because Amazon is a stranger too. So what could a stranger find out about me on behalf with my data? Let's go back to him later and see what he has found out. So meanwhile, let's come back to the accidental triggers and dive deeper into Alexa and Echo and the life of smart speakers. This is where these nice guys come to play. These are scientists from the Ruhr University in Bochum and the Max Planck Institute for Security and Privacy. They have conducted a pretty interesting experiment to find more about this accidental trigger. I visited them, I filmed them, I also had long interviews with them. And later on, I managed to ask two of them to come to our Q&A later. So if I now don't cover their experiment in all the deepness, you will later also get the chance to ask them about it. So Let's dive in. What did they do? They built a living room. They simulated a living room. And they put a lot of smart speakers in there. So there was an Echo, there was a Siri, there also was a smart speaker from Google and from other players in the market. And then they started to play TV series, like How I Met Your Mother, like Stranger Things, and all popular and common and favorite. I think Game of Thrones also was there. They played it like days and days and days and nights all the time to see when these smart speakers may accidental trigger and which words or which noises, which sounds make them wake up and how often, because they wanted to find out which are the sounds, which are the noises, and they also wanted to find out how robust are they. So this was pretty interesting to see which smart speakers have a stronger wake word, which are weaker, which are waking up more often and they shouldn't. And they had pretty interesting things. And if you want to learn more about it, you should definitely also go to their website and check out all these nice and examples. And in the end, they had they did it in English for 9 days and had 314 accidental triggers. And in German, they also did some nice things like Traumschiff or the Tagesschau, which is the biggest news show in Germany. They did it for 7 days and had 168 accidental triggers, what they found. And they also did some other cool stuff like opening up an Echo smart speaker, doing some reverse engineering. They really tried to get deep into the materia and understand the smart speakers very, very well. They had some of these wake words. They were also some little bit funny, because then instead of Hey Siri, there was Daikiri. It was Ein Daikiri bitte. One Daikiri, please, from Traumschiff, was a little sequence. And Daikiri, I think you get it. It's very similar to Hey Siri. And so the smart speaker, gets the sounds or is mixing the sounds, especially when accents are used. Then the smart speaker is getting this through another. And then Daikiri, Hey Siri, or Botswana, Cortana. I think you get it. There is a resemblance and the smart speaker mixes it and then it turns on and sends the data. The same thing is, of course, something like Alexa and Alexandra, I think. All these things are very obvious. But what is, with the cooking with the cooking sounds, what is with the children's blah, blah, what you already have heard? So Why does here the smart speaker is opening up a connection? Why is it triggered? Okay. They had this phenomenon too. They had the Wuppertaler Schwebebahn. And you might actually ask, why does a smart speaker triggers at Wuppertaler Schwebebahn? And I definitely want to explain it to you. It is, you can see here, Alexa's on-device wake word detection is based on a neural network. It decides if it has heard the wake word or not. And as maybe some of you already know, an artificial neural network works and learns not like a human. Instead, it is fed with millions and billions of samples and decides with every new sound if it is the wake word or not. And if the neural network never has heard in his life before the phonemes of Wuppertaler Schwebebahn, then it is possible that it confuses them with the wake word. Okay, now to the crucial point of all of this. To train this neural network, the big tech company need actual people to listen to it, to the accidental triggers, but also to all the other stuff, because there have to be people behind all of this to to correct the network and make it learn and make it better. So now we come to the point, who else is listening? Here you can see on the right side, there's a big Bloomberg Business Week title, Alexa, What's Privacy? And I really like this title because you have this ear inside of the smart speaker. And they brought a big story in 2019. I think they were the first ones who brought it so big that actual people are sitting behind this, and that there are people doing transcriptions, and that there are people training the neural network. I also managed to talk to several transcribers for this research, and we will hear them. We will go to them later. And the first glimpse, you may think, okay, but this is such a small proportion what they listen to. If you ask Amazon or Apple about this, then Amazon tells you it's only 2% on voice recordings, which we are using for human transcribers. And if you're asking Apple about this, they tell you the same. They are saying it's only 0.2%. But when you look more closely, then you see that only for Apple, these are more than 350 million voice recordings per year. Only Apple. So this is quite a lot. Then let's go meet the first one. I did a big research. I approached them, and I also managed to speak to a couple of them, but to go, you know, on camera, giving an interview is always a different thing. And here the woman we will hear now, she worked for Amazon in Aachen, which is a German city in the Midwest. And she worked there from the German office, and worked there a couple of years, but not until today. So she's long gone. And she only wanted to speak to me anonymized, because she had signed a contract that she never ever will tell anything about her work. So that's the reason why when we look at her now, you won't see her face or hear her voice. Okay, let's go.
Ich habe mich irgendwann unwohl gefühlt, weil man so viel mitbekommen hat. Und für mich war auch immer ein kritischer Punkt die Kinderstimmen. Man hört so viel, man kriegt so viel mit. Und ich habe mich unwohl gefühlt zu sehen, wie viel dieses Gerät einfach aufnimmt.
She quit in 2018, and I think it's pretty important to say at this point that she never knew who was talking. So she heard these voices, but there was no identification number, or this is your Amazon account number or a name or something like this. Only when people are speaking loudly the name into the smart speaker, then she knew, of course, this is this or that person. Or she told me there was a person who told the smart speaker his credit card number. So, of course, she had his credit card number. But usually it was very anonymous job. But nevertheless, she felt more and more uncomfortable, because she got this feeling that she's listening and tuning in to actual people's life. And she felt uncomfortable about this. And I think I have to add up here that these were contractors. They were not paid so well. There was not a very good atmosphere in this office. They were like, yeah, human machines. And so I think this also might be a reason why this work was not very fulfilling. But okay, let's go on with this story. So it's not only Amazon doing this, but also, of course, Apple, Google, they all need to do this to train the neural networks. And also with Apple, I found a girl or a young woman who was willing to talk to me about her work. And I think in her case, to get a better understanding, with Siri, it's a little bit different than with Amazon's Alexa, because with Siri, you also do SMS dictation, you do email dictation, Some lawyers, doctors, they are using Siri to dictate notes. And this is the reason why with Siri, the sound bites are maybe much more intense than with Alexa, because Alexa you're using for daily commands. And I think the most intrusive thing is if there goes a lineup and you hear some strange voices for 10 or 15 seconds. But with Siri, it's a little bit different because you use it for all these transcribing things. And this is the reason why she heard a lot more intrusive things. Okay, let's get to her.
Was ich persönlich gehört habe, waren zum Beispiel so Gesprächsfetzen mit Ärzten oder wo jemand, ich nehme an, mit dem Chef geredet hat in einem Meeting. Manchmal hört sich's an, wie wenn sich jemand streitet im Hintergrund. Sex hat man gehört.
Warum hast du Sex gehört? Das tut man doch nicht in sein Telefon reinplabbern.
Die Leute haben das vielleicht daneben liegen. Es hört sich dann an wie der Trigger, also das Triggerwort. Es nimmt sie dann halt auf und denkt, da ist irgendwas. Ja, und dann gab es natürlich noch die SMS. Die SMS, die waren auch spannend. Wenn dann wirklich Leute erzählt haben, du wusstest halt, die Stimme, die ich da jetzt höre, der betrügt seine Frau.
Wie war das für dich?
Es war halt ein Job.
Ja, in the end, of course, it was a job to listen to other people's voice messages. I talked to her, but I also talked to another Apple transcriber, and he told me basically the same. And he also said that it felt more and more uncomfortable to listen to all this very, very personal messages and to get inside in other people's life. Yeah. Of course, this is kind of creepy. And of course, I and also other journalists asked Apple about this, and they shared this statement with me, this old statement. It is from August 2019. When they said, okay, we have to improve Siri's privacy, and they definitely changed some things. And I think the important thing I have to point out in this point is that when you now purchase a new Apple device, then they are asking you very small, very tiny checkbox. When they say, do you want to help Siri to improve? And if you click OK, then your data is transferred to transcribers who are doing the grading. This is the terminus for what they are doing, the grading. They are correcting the neural network. And then you have to fill in a little checkbox, and then they do it. But it is an opt-in anyway. So there was some kind of improvement made with Apple. So, of course, these accidental recordings are very intrusive to listen to, and not only the accidental, but also the SMS and all the other messages, they are very intrusive to listen to, but in the end, they don't give a very deep insight of a person's life, because it's only very fragmented, and but this is where the metadata starts to shine. And this is where I want to go with you now, to my Alexa experiment part two. I think probably you remember Marvin from the very beginning of the talk, my very nice NDR colleague. And if you recall, I gave him my Amazon Alexa data, not only the voice recordings, but voice recordings with timestamps. And after analyzing them, he got to know me and my family very well. And so will you, because I want to show you at least the main key findings he had out of my Amazon data. So he prepared a little data expose for me, and I met him. This was the first thing I saw. It is, as you probably, some of you know, this Norden book, Permanent Record. And this is what he wrote there. Look, Svea, here is a sad Snowden staring at you. I think I bought it as an audiobook, and this is why it was listed in the Alexa recordings. Okay, but enough with the funny stuff. Yeah, this is Marvin showing me my home, showing me my house. And actually, he got it nearly right, or surprisingly right. We have two lamps in the bedroom. We have actually four lamps in the living room, but they are working as one. This is when I say Alexa, living room on or off, then it turns four lamps on and off, but he got that right. And all the other rooms, he got them right too. So this was for me the first little bit creepy point that you can reconstruct my home, my house, out of my Alexa data because I have connected all the lights with it. Go on. Yeah, what can you see here? The blue bars you see there, this is the timer. And the red ones, these are all the other Alexa voice commands. And you can see how often Alexa was activated daily. So he also he could definitely see the first lockdown in the data in March, because this is a time when you see that we have been at home more often. And you could also see weekdays. You can see the weekends. What do you think the weekends are? Yeah, you can see the weekends because there the timer is always high. So maybe these are the eggs for breakfast, or this is, I know it, I like to bake cake. So I think this is my weekends baking. You could even see if I haven't baked a cake, then maybe there's only one or two timers set. 3B and not cool what you can do with this Alexa metadata. But this is not the end. Goes on. Let's check out the last slide from them. Lots of dots. This dots, he tried to reconstruct my daily routines. He tried to see, when do I get up? When do I go to bed? And you definitely can see this with Alexa, because especially in the winter time, when you turn on the lights or you put the lights off, then you can see this in the Alexa data. And you see here on the left side there on the epsilon axis, you can see that I get up between 7 and 8 and that I go to bed pretty late, around 11 p.m., between 11 p.m. and midnight. So this is also something you can see with my metadata. And I'm pretty sure if you would have taken more time and more effort and start to combine the data or look at other data from my life, you get a pretty good idea who I am. And I think it's definitely worth to think a step further, because you also buy stuff with Amazon. Maybe you have an Amazon Kindle, then you read books with Amazon. And in the end, they get a pretty good idea what kind of person you are. And I think this is a very huge and vast data collection in the head of a super billion tech company. Let's jump to the conclusion. What does this mean? What is the idea in the end of all of this? Of course, you could now personally say, okay, I ban all the smart speakers, I ban all the smart assistants out of my life. And I think probably today you could do this. Yeah, you can deactivate smart assistants on your phone. You can never buy a smart speaker for your home, avoid it in a hotel, when you are at a friend's house and he has a smart speaker, you probably can deactivate it. But if you think that through, for me, I thought this is in our society, this is not possible anymore. I think we are back at the beginning. Smart speakers are on the rise. They are here to stay. It is a technology which is evolving very fast. And also, it's a very interesting technology because if you think today, many people, they are always staring on their screen. And the smart assistant, smart speaker technique is going away that is going or is working in a way that people don't have to look on their screen all the time. And for that, they have to learn. But what is the price for all of this? What is the price? Because in a way, people who are using this technology are unwillingly guinea pigs in the whole setup for the testing, and they are giving up their privacy for that. So I spoke with the data commissioner here in Hamburg about this problem and asked him what they are doing about this and what they are doing also to give boundaries to the big technology companies like Amazon, like Apple. And I must admit, the answer was disappointing because I definitely like GDPR and I always think GDPR is a pretty good idea or was a pretty good idea and is a good solution. But GDPR is not helping here because, for example, Apple is sitting in Ireland, Amazon is sitting in Luxembourg, and it always depends on the data office, commissioner's offices there if they are doing anything or if they are pursuing anything or pushing anything. And if they don't, nothing is really happening. And yeah, and there's always the thing with the opt-in and opt-out version. And for Amazon, it's still that you are opt-in when you buy it, when you set it up. It's always an opt-in and you have to opt out, but I will get back to that. So the data commissioner did not really help me here. And I went on and asked again Apple and Amazon about this, and also the answers I already told you with Apple. It's they say, okay, it's an we changed the way, it's an active opt-in now, which I think is kind of good. And they also said, yeah, we are not using contractors anymore. This is now done by Apple employees. What I personally think is kind of a wish-wash because who is now listening to my voice recordings? I think this doesn't matter for most of the people if they are Apple employees or if they are working for a subcontractor. But these are basically, I think, the most... yeah, or two of the most important things they changed in 2019. With Amazon, it's a little bit harder because they did not change it into an active opt-in option. You are opt-in when you buy an Amazon, when you set up Alexa, you fill one checkbox, I agree with the terms and services and stuff and everything, and then it's gone. If you want to change then that, you have to go to the sub menu, and then you can opt out of the transcription mode. So if you don't want to have that, you would now go there and check out. But the data, of course, will be transferred anyway, but there won't be any human transcribers working with that. And they also said, okay, it's only Amazon employees working with your data. So it was not very satisfying, all these answers. And I was looking for a model which maybe give me a kind of a glimpse what could be a better solution for all of this. What can train a neural network and is not such a big deal for your privacy as a user from a device. And I found this and I like this very idea very much. It's a Mozilla project. It's a Common Voice project. And you can give your voice data as a donor. It's basically like a crowdsourced project. You can speak in word sentences, read a book, and this and your voice is recorded and analyzed, and then it is meant to be a very big database with donated voices and not with harvested data from many people all of the world. So I like this idea, but I also read the rumors that due to Corona and stuff, maybe this project will be terminated, but I haven't found an official statement about this recent. But I like the idea very much. So I want to come to my final remarks and to my closing. So I think the first point and one of the most important point to see and to understand with this talk is that smart speakers are collecting a lot of data, a lot. As I already told you in the very beginning, Alexa is always listening, and also Alexa is periodically building up a connection to Amazon servers to look for updates and maybe to share some data, not voice data, but other data. This is something you can see in the logs. Then you have all these timestamps, you have all this metadata, so definitely smart speakers are collecting a lot of data, and you can do a lot of things with it, what you have seen on my example. Second thing I found pretty important is that metadata is even more intrusive than voice data, because on the first glimpse, you may think, oh, she listened to sex, or, oh, she listened, somebody is betraying his her wife. No, metadata is the key. This is what I saw in my experiment, that I thought, okay, if you have all this metadata from me, you definitely get a very good picture of me as a person or as a family member, way more better picture than you get maybe from the short voice commands I'm giving or on the accidental triggers. And last but not least, GDPR is at the moment not saving us here. So I think definitely there have to be better solutions for the future if we want to go on using this technology, and if we want to go on developing this technology, there have to be better solutions. And I definitely think not only we as users are on charge and trying to protect ourselves, but also politicians are in charge, are asked to do anything about this and to find good boundaries so that we are not the unwilling guinea pigs in the whole play. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. And before we go to the Q&A, I definitely have to thank many, many people who are supporting my work, who are working together with me, sharing ideas, sharing data, sharing experiences. These are also the guys from NDR, but also the scientists in this case from Ruhr University and Max Planck Institute. And I'm very happy that two of them will join us now for Q&A. Thank you so much, and welcome with me together, Max and Lea. Thank you. See you in the Q&A now.
Great. Thanks for that excellent talk. It was amazing to see what you did there. So now we've got actually not just Svea here, as I said at the beginning, but we've also got Lea and Max. I'll just let them introduce themselves. That's probably better than me saying anything.
Yeah, okay, I will start. So I'm Lea, and I'm working at Ruhr Universität Bochum in IT security. And in the research paper Svea introduced in her talk, I was focusing on the deep learning and the speech recognition part, and was looking into how the characteristics of such accidental triggers are and how we can craft such triggers by looking at the phone, the phone-based distance of common English words to the respective wake word.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm Max. Hi, I'm a postdoc at the Max Planck Institute for Security and Privacy in Bochum. I'm mostly interested in usable security and privacy. And in this project, I was responsible for the technical setup, meaning that we jailbreaked an Amazon Echo speaker, reverse engineered the first generation speaker and what is happening on the device, adding light sensors, observing the measurements, and obviously watching hours of Game of Thrones.
And then there's Svea now also live.
Yes.
But she already introduced herself, I think.
I hope so, yes. I'm Svea. Hi, you know everything about me now.
I'll repeat. So we're now live and you can ask your questions, ISC, Twitter, and so on. And we'll still read them and collect them. And then I guess I'll start with our first few questions. So the first question that was asked is, do you use Alexa, et cetera, yourself?
I think for me, it's kind of obvious. So I used Alexa a lot. Now we have a Siri at home. So the research didn't change it all, didn't change everything. But yeah, Max or Leah, what about you?
Yeah, so I don't use Alexa or any other speak assistant. And yeah, Max.
For me, it's the same. Yeah, I see some usability benefits, but I don't have a smart home. So I don't know what to do with it. And just a timer, I'm too lazy or too privacy preserving to have such a device at home.
So you even though you now know a little bit more, it hasn't changed your view a lot, what you've uncovered. Have you found any, is there anything that surprised you in the course of your research? Something that you kind of didn't guess before?
I think for me, of course, the one thing is guessing, you know, and the one thing is thinking about something, and it's always different when you try something on yourself and when you're listening to all your recordings 6 months ago, when you are watching the metadata, or better, if some stranger comes and tell you, oh, you're going to bed really late. So of course I anticipated everything, but then making the experience is deeper and is of course creepier. And I really, especially the metadata experiment, I thought about it a lot. And in the end, I liked Siri better because Apple's business model is not so much the data side as it is maybe from Amazon. But yeah, I think it's definitely a trade-off what you have to do here between between the comfort of having a smart speaker at home and a smart home, and on the other side, of course, the whole privacy issue.
Mm-hmm. And the two researchers?
I mean, for me, it was very exciting that you can actually reproduce those accidental triggers. I got a push notification on my phone when we first detected by brute forcing or playing videos of TV shows, newscasts, and so on. When it first triggered, and then I'm at my home, I did have an Alexa at that time too. And then I tried it myself, started Netflix, played this episode in this very minute, and it actually triggered. And that was, yeah, obvious, but also very surprising for a researcher. It's reproducible.
Did you do something kind of really to get closer access than to Alexa than what you would as sort of a normal user? Did you kind of hack the device, something that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
Can you say a bit more about that?
It's not our... nothing we did, but we followed tutorials online because there was some previous work on that. Usually academia does not try to hack devices, but in this case we did to investigate what is going on the speaker, on the Amazon Echo first generation speaker. So we wired or jailbreaked into the device. We had a root shell, and then we hooked the OpenSSL library and dumped everything with Wireshark that was sent to the cloud and investigated what is going on the device. So what happens if there is something like a near miss, that is something that sounds like Alexa but is not Alexa, mm-hmm. and what happens if the device detects the wake word Alexa, but in fact the cloud decides it was not Alexa and stuff like this. It was unclear. Is it really indicating via its LED ring that it's listening or not, or uploading data or not, and stuff like this?
What we can say is that whenever the LED ring is on, there's never sent data if the LED ring is not on. Mm-hmm. So even if there's an accidental trigger, which is on the local device, but that is not verified in the cloud, the ring will turn on, and within 1 or 2 seconds, the cloud will decide if it wasn't trigger or not. So there will also not be uploaded much more data than the 1 to 2 seconds.
So for Alexa, the processing doesn't, for the wake word, doesn't just happen on the device itself. There is some data that is always transmitted in the cloud, even if there's a near miss. I think that was a question. How do you know that Alexa is only uploading the speech after the keyword? And I think your answer is, well, it's not. It's
correct. So first of all, as said in the video or in the stream, the Echo speaker is always listening, always recording, but only uploading data to the cloud when it assumes that the wake word has been detected. And for this, it's a two-part process. There's a local neural network on the device itself. It's rather tiny, not so good. And then when it has a certain value of about 0.57, which is in the range between 0 and 1, it decides to upload data. And there's a constant speedy connection to the Amazon cloud. And when once this threshold is met, it will start uploading data. And then the cloud neural network will check this as well and verify whether the wake word is really there or not. And if it's not, then it will send a stop signal. And all of that happens within 1 or 2 seconds. It's very fast.
The reason for the cloud network is that the on-device network is more lightweight, so you cannot have the huge neural network as it is in the cloud on the device. So they use second network in the cloud to verify, or to basically verify if it was recognized.
But do you think that's an actual limitation? Because, I mean, you could just put a better CPU inside, or a TPU, or something that could do it? Or is it just an excuse that they say, well, sorry, we're just, we want to be absolutely certain, and so we send it to the cloud? I mean, do you have a feeling about that?
A feeling, no information, but the project started in 2011, or at least the code that we have seen includes libraries that are from that time. And nowadays, Alexa is in your car and even in your shower. And the Echo speaker could be quite powerful today, but it was not at that time. And nowadays, we have many devices where Alexa is built in your smart TV and so on. And I guess there's a real technical limitation. You cannot put the same neural network into such a small device.
Right. But I mean, one could possibly imagine if, for example, you have a pretty powerful hub or your phone or something, the data could just be sent to your phone and processed on your phone, because the phones are getting better and better. The chips are now so powerful that,
Correct. I guess it's the usual usability trade-off here, that it adds latency if you first send this data to your phone to verify and make sure and stuff like this. So there are many options to improve the privacy in the whole process, but it's always the question whether customers are interested in this, whether it's worth spending this money in development and so on. Right.
Especially Alexa, it's pretty cheap. I think it definitely would higher the cost for the speaker. And I think the gain of Amazon is clearly to push over Echo speaker over the whole world and to increase the speaker, because I don't think they make the big money with the hardware, and it's more interesting to collect all the speech data to train the neural network. I think this is one asset here. And on the other hand, of course, it's the thing with the online or with the voice shopping and TV watching here, which is the other asset.
I mean, that's also a very easy way to collect the data, which they, on the other hand, will use to improve the model too. So, yeah, otherwise, yeah, for them, it's an easy way to get the data.
So someone asked here, I think it's related somewhat to that. What do you think about not paying with your personal data and learning to implement the technology of speech recognition yourself? There does not have to literally be a single bit of data leaving your home. And, you know, one might have the knowledge to implement such a system, as long as you have the knowledge to implement such a system yourself. So I think that there's a thread around open source. It's something that's very popular at C3, obviously. Have you looked at such open source solutions at all? I've seen some mentions of Mycroft.ai or Björn Karman. .dk project alias.
There are open source speech recognition software. So we haven't included that into our studies because we're focusing on something else. But in general, it's possible, it should be possible. Yeah, also if you want, you can build your own speech assistant and which runs offline or most of the time offline, and especially the recognition.
I guess the first commercial implementation of this is this on-device speech recognition in the newer Google Pixel phones that is completely offline. So it can definitely be implemented even on limited hardware. And there are some existing projects but none of them are commercially active or sell units as far as I am aware.
So there was a critical question. So I just read it out and add something myself, I think. So it's, journalists have been accused several times this year of deliberately exaggerating stories for clickbait. What precautions were taken in this research? I ask this because I already found some safeguards against accidental listening by reading the manual. So I don't know whether you know, that person hasn't clarified, you know, what they found. Maybe they can share it in ISC and I'll come back to it. But, you know, did you read the manual and did you discover something that Amazon said they did and was actually wrong? Maybe.
Of course, I read all the called the data protection agreement, where you said you're okay on, and this also is part of the documentary. Very interesting reading, seeing me reading all these things. No, Amazon is not hiding anything. They are writing it in her. They are writing it pretty clear. It's only nobody reads this stuff. I think this is the thing. And I think with Amazon especially, what I think as problematic also in a GDPR sense is that it's not an opt-in. So with Apple, after 2019, they have started to do the transcribing as an opt-in option. So if you set up a new device, they will ask you if you want that somebody, if you want to help Siri to improve learning. Amazon is not doing this. You can opt out, but you cannot opt in. And I definitely want to say about this clickbaiting thing. ARD NDR is public television broadcaster, so we are not commercially funded with ads or something. So I would say I'm you know, like when I do research, it's not about clickbait. It's more about getting insights and trying to shed light on an issue and to bring transparency into an issue, because I think many, many people, normal people, like smart speakers and have them at home. And I think it's always pretty important to know what I have in my home. And I think it's not enough to write it in, you know, in the sub menu somewhere in the itty bitty tiny little letters. And so this, I think it's part of the journalistic approach to bring light in it. And also I think part of the scientific approach.
Method. Yeah. So I think I've now got the clarification. It was exactly as you said, that by reading the manual, they didn't mean, as I thought, reading the, you know, developer manual, but the user's, you know, privacy options and whatever they take. And you answered, I think, that question already. So I think we're happy there. Then there was a security question, which is, I don't know how much you know about this. How difficult would it be for an attacker to deploy a different wake word model to the device to get it to collect more data?
Max, can you answer?
Yeah, the wake word thing is quite interesting, but you don't need to. It's not that complicated. In fact, you can, once you have physical access to the device and you have a root shell on it, you can mirror out everything that is said all the time. So you can dump it via a netcat to a remote server, for example. And there is our hyperlink in the paper on the website that points to a presentation that is exactly doing this. So they are wiretapping an Amazon Echo speaker. But first you need this physical access, as far as I'm aware.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do this. And regarding changing the wake word model, I think there's something for Leah.
Yeah. So in theory, so what we have seen when we were looking into the device, it should be possible. So we haven't done it because it will be a lot of effort and probably painful. But I would not exclude that it is impossible if you put enough effort into it.
Yeah, as far as we are aware, it's based on the open source framework Kaldi.
Yeah.
And
in 2011, it's based on a 2011 version of the code, and Amazon will have changed a lot, or will have changed some essential things, but yeah, it's not encrypted, so you can have a look into the binary code and try to reverse it to get to change it into your model if you really would like to.
So one thing was that one problem is maybe that the wake word itself is not accurate, right? So if the wake word was perfectly accurate, people would feel more comfortable that it's not triggered at inappropriate times. Did you? I think you told me you did some research on whether there are potentially better wake words, and maybe you can say a little bit about the reason why the wake words are what they are and why they are potentially suboptimal and what you think could happen to make them better in that sense? Just an incremental improvement, maybe.
Yeah, I will start, Leah, you can join in. So our first idea was that having a two-word wake word like, hey, Siri, is better than just Siri, but that's not true. And regarding the history behind the wake words, they are mostly commercial driven. So there is no scientific reason why it's called. For example, Alexa. For example, the wake word Amazon is a pretty bad wake word. Similarly, computer. And one reason for that is we use it on a regular basis when we communicate as humans. So saying the word computer happens quite frequently, right? And in the paper, you can find some anecdotes why the wake word are the way they are. There's room for improvements. You could choose better wake words.
Mm-hmm. Like Wuppertaler Schwebebahn, for example. No,
correct.
So So what we were also doing, we were looking into the, what kind of words are accidental triggers, and measure the distance or the phone-based distance to the accidental triggers and the wake word. And also try to find other accidental triggers by comparing the 10,000 most common English words with the wake word, and optimized our distance measure based on the phones of the word, and we were actually able to find other accidental triggers or word combinations that actually trigger an Alexa wake word.
Do you know an example of a good, like, what's the best word you found when you did use? I'm sure you tried to find that out.
So our favorite, or my favorite, is unacceptable for Alexa. Okay. I think that's something everyone can try. I don't know.
Maybe that's unacceptable for Amazon as a work word, maybe. Because...
Yeah, it was quite interesting. We also found election. Election also triggers Alexa.
Oh, okay. So unacceptable for Alexa triggers Alexa.
Yes.
Okay, my question was, do you have a proposal for a good wake word? What's the best wake word one could choose that is as far as possible from any known English word? You see what I mean?
So one easy way would to repeat the word, because of that you automatically increase the measure or the distance to other English words.
And it's not something people usually do.
Correct.
You don't go around and say, Alexa, 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 Alexa. That...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something we propose in the paper, a safe word, so to speak. Mm-hmm. People want to have a hands-free communication with the speaker and do not want to touch the mute button, which is always an option to avoid such triggers, right? But then you cannot re-enable it using your voice. And one potential way that we imagine is a privacy mode that is implemented in the speaker, and then you have to say Alexa 3 times in a row to re-enable the normal operation, so to speak. The problem here is more a trust issue. So similar to the mute button, people simply do not trust that Alexa is really not listening. And then they do what everyone would do. They simply unplug the device to be sure. And yeah.
Cool. So we have, I think, going in a different direction, coming back to earlier, the fact that you're not using Alexa and Siri. Question for Svea. Would it change your mind to use Alexa daily if Jeff Bezos ran for the US presidency?
I don't know. That's a hypothetical question. I actually have never thought about that. It's a funny question, but I really
Thought
about it. But, you know, I really was fascinated by the film Her, where Joaquin Phoenix is always communicating with this artificial intelligence or with this neural network in his ear. And, you know, I think right now we are really far away from all of that, because when I'm communicating with Siri or also with Alexa, there is a lot of things not working. And so I think these devices definitely have to improve and to learn a lot so that they function in a way that they are really, really helping and making daily life easier. But I'm definitely skeptical about this massive trade-off and about what I said in the conclusion about the guinea pig factor. And I haven't, or for me, there's not a real solution at the horizon. The only thing which I think is really interesting is what is said earlier, that Google has already implemented a neural network on the phone which is working offline. But once it works offline, then it cannot improve. So you see, there is always this trade-off right now.
Even though I think federated learning could theoretically help with that, and you could learn from it.
Maybe.
Leah?
Yep. with federated learning, it is possible that not everyone has all the data, or so it does not have all the information and can extract other meta information out of it, but every part only gets part of the data, and the neural network for the vector recognition would then be trained in a distributed way. So they will send the results to update the neural network, but without a central instance having all the information to extract other information than the what is necessary to update the neural network.
Do you think that legal requirements could change that those sorts of things are made mandatory, that the amount of data that's sent is reduced? because I think that that's a question someone said, you know, they're not necessarily so worried so much about the people listening to recordings, but just that the fact that, you know, your very private data ends up in the hands of such an important corporation. It's, I mean, it's like Big Brother in 1984. We really got to trust those people right now.
Yes, and I think there's also another aspect. We I haven't covered this in my talk in all the details. But when you think it through, and when you think you have, for example, these transcribers on the other end, and you are saying, okay, call my friend Anna, for example, and Siri get it wrong, and the transcriber has access to your contacts. They have access to the names, not necessarily the numbers, but to the names of your phone book. Because of course they only can correct things when they know what is right, you see? So what I want to emphasize here is that it's not only the voice data or the transcription of the voice data, but all the apps who are connected with Siri, so that data definitely is crossed and is mixed together. And this I think is also a very important point, because always when you have several data sets from a person, then you get more and more into this knowing the person thing. And I definitely think this is a problem too. You have the playlist, you have maybe the places visit, you have the contact data.
And I would like to add that vendors definitely need to work on their way of giving consent. I was away during Christmas and updated to macOS Big Sur today, and the first thing that popped up was, oh, by the way, you can use Hey Siri, and the checkbox was crossed by default that all my voice data is uploaded to Apple, and you should implement real consent forms that users have the option to consent. Currently, it's either pre-clicked, pre-enabled, like you are signed up by default, or the UI is designed in a way that the incorrect or not so privacy preserving option is light blue or enabled by default and easier to click. And the tiny thing on the lower left is, no, I do not want to upload my data and share my data. And that's wrong and needs to be changed.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's encountered, I think, some pop-ups on websites where it's just impossible to unset all the tick marks because you have to do 10 of them. Someone wanted to know a bit more about the metadata, some hard things. Did you, for example, I was wondering, people often say, you know, I want to get a new vacuum cleaner. They said that without, you know, saying Alexa before that. And then next day on Facebook, the next day they see ads about vacuum cleaners. Is that something that you could, you know, did you get some insight into that? That Alexa might still be, you know, listening into those things. That's a fear that people have.
Yeah, that's tinfoil stuff. We can definitely reject this. Alexa is only uploading data when it is indicating that via the LED activity indicator. But what is happening in the background and without LED activity is it submits metadata. For example, there's a fingerprint database on the device, and that is a protection mechanism to not trigger when Alexa is mentioned, for example, in a TV commercial. Mm-hmm. And this fingerprint database is updated once a week. And it also transmits the number of times a fingerprint matched. So in theory, Amazon could know what car commercial you have watched recently on TV, and Amazon or the Echo speaker listened to that and have decided not to enable itself because it found a match with this fingerprint database. So the metadata is the most problematic stuff here.
Yeah. And I had a Pi-hole installed, and I looked into the data, but I did not do I did not do like an expose or something, so I could not share it in my talk because I did not do this methodically. I just, you know, installed a Pi-hole and then looked, okay, and I I definitely saw that Alexa is doing stuff. The Echo Speaker does stuff in the background, not transmitting voice recordings, but it does stuff. Max, maybe you can give more insight in this.
Yeah, we, for example, it reports on what Wi-Fi you are, what your current Spotify, whether you are using Spotify or not, what the current active skill is and stuff like this. And it's happening all the time. And I mentioned before that the cloud network, cloud neural network, decides that this is not Alexa and does stop the upload of the data, and this happens within 1 or 2 seconds, and it's only that fast because every speaker maintains a constant speedy connection to the Amazon cloud. So there's definitely a constant connection all the time to the Amazon cloud when the speaker is on.
So I think the speaker gains massive insight in your life, and I think that when you connect this data with your Amazon Prime with your Amazon Prime account, it is enough to to submit you a vacuum cleaner or stuff. I think this metadata is enough to propose to you the correct commercial or to propose to you the right products. I think the metadata is enough, and they don't need to analyze all the blah blah which is in the room. This is what I think about it.
You might not be experts, but do you think that it's like, can you opt out of this metadata collection, or is that just something that's hardwired in there? Is that even legal under GDPR that you like, it's not, is it essential? I think there would need to be some.
Yeah, it's when you buy an Echo speaker and when you implement it at home, they ask you, do you agree with the terms of service? And then you like, you click agree, and then you have kind of sold your soul. So it is written in there. We are using all the data we can collect. And the only thing where you can opt out is the thing with the transcribers. You can opt out. I don't want that a third person is listening to my voice recordings to improve Alexa, smart speaker.
And did you speak to lawyers, whether that's...
Yeah, of course I spoke to the data commissioner.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing. No, it's not. GDPR wants a real consent to such things like this. So it's not okay in a GDPR way. But Amazon is sitting in Luxembourg, and they have the Luxembourg people, it's in their office to do anything about it, and they don't. So. Okay.
Great. All right. I think we've almost covered all the questions. I mean, there were loads of questions, and it was really interesting. And maybe just one more thing. We'll post, and maybe for the video later, just add a little link for your paper where you go into a lot more detail. And at some point, you said you also share data, raw data.
Correct. Yeah. We share all those accidental triggers there.
Yeah. So if you want to dive into more details, have a look at the paper. Thank you so much. And we're going to have the next talk here in 15 minutes. And thanks for listening in to Chaos West. Come back, share this video if you liked it. It's going to be recorded on it's going to be available on Media, CCC, YouTube, Twitch, and so on. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.